Welcome to Denver Community Church Online. My name is John Gettings, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Whether you attend one of our Denver locations on a Sunday or listen online, our hope is to be a group of people who are a just, generous community, practicing love in the ways of Jesus. As you listen to this teaching, allow it to begin a conversation with you and God, you and the Bible, and you and your community. If you have any questions about this teaching or DCC, email us. And if you'd like to help financially support our community and our partners as we give away 20% of every dollar that comes in, you can text Denver Church to 77977. Thank you for joining us today.
All right. Hey, good morning. Good to see you all. You know, I was just at Wash Park, and hopefully it's not on recording, but like, you know, I'm from uptown. I love this place. I'm so glad to be here. It's good. I love being at Wash Park. They're fantastic, but they're not uptown. It's good to see you guys. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. It's so good to be here. I love being in this room with you. Hey, we are finishing a four-week series on justice. We're doing that today. Over the last several weeks, we've covered a variety of topics regarding justice, trying to root ourselves in the historic Christian scriptures, root ourselves in the life of Jesus and who he was, and asking the question, what does justice look like in our world today, and how do we become a part of it? How do we become contributors toward justice? And I want to finish that series today by talking about the concept of peacemaking. And when I say peacemaking, it probably conjures up all kinds of different thoughts for you based on your experience of how you understand peace in our world. But I want to begin our time of talking about peace and why it's so important to me. Because I think that a lot of times when we talk about peace, we're talking about this concept of the absence of conflict, or the idea that this idyllic state of this place, like that we don't really, can't even really put our hands on too much. It's not very tangible for us, but it's kind of like what we hope for, the idea that there wouldn't be war, there wouldn't be conflict, and that we need to get along. And I've appreciated, and maybe more than ever, we need the fact that over the last several weeks, the concept of unity has come up over and over again. But as I finish this series, I really want to talk about what it means to be a peacemaker in our world, because I think when we talk about unity and we throw around words like peace, sometimes they become throwaway words for us. And we lose the powerful reality, the truth, that to be peacemakers and to achieve unity does not come without the cost of great conflict. To be people who stand for and work for justice in our world, to literally be peacemakers, oftentimes comes with a cost, and it's not easy. And that there is something distinct about being a peacemaker in the way of Jesus. So I want to start with Dr. Martin Luther King. This last week, we celebrated, as we do every year, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Maybe you got to be a part of the Marade, which is one of the largest marades in the country that happens just right there on Colfax, beginning at City Park and ends at Civic Center Park. And many of you may not know, I mean, we all know about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I don't feel like, because of where I grew up and how I grew up, I didn't know a lot about Dr. Martin Luther King. I had my perceptions. But what I would say is he's a hero of mine, as he is to many, many, many people. But he's specifically a hero of mine because when I was in college, I knew that I was called to ministry. But honestly, my proclivities were more toward cross-cultural work. I saw myself as someone who, in the spirit of Dr. King, was called to cross boundaries. And so I spent a time lived in Kenya for over a year, and then have always been a part, sort of like the thread of my life has been being called to cross-cultural situations. And so when it came to being a pastor, I had thought about the pastor in a very specific way, and I thought, I don't know that I want to do that because I don't know what allowed me to do the work I'm called to. But it was learning and and understanding the life and the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that began to transform my understanding of what it meant to be a pastor, because before he was an incredible orator, before he was an activist, before he was literally a global icon, he was first and foremost literally a parish pastor. He had a congregation that was smaller than our church that he cared for, that he served at, that of course he preached with incredible oratory gifts we could all inspire to. But he was a pastor. And so he really redefined and challenged me in my understanding of what it means to be a pastor in the world, and that activism and care for the least of these and working for some of the world's most important issues did not have to be divorced from being a pastor and offering pastoral care, but actually those two were inextricably linked. He transformed my understanding. And what I love about Dr. Martin Luther King, because one of his primary themes is this concept of peacemaking in our world, is that first and foremost, his concept of peace was not some liberal concept of some idyllic state that we could one day achieve, but it was rooted and grounded in the life, in the teachings of Jesus Christ. It was rooted and grounded in this concept of peacemaking as a sufferingly costly way in our world. It was grounded in the Jewish concept of shalom, which is not peace as we often talk about it, but it really is this concept of holistic thriving. It's rooted in the concept of justice. They're inseparable. Peace in our world means things are the way they're supposed to be. It's bringing things to rights. And this was the foundation of Dr. Martin Luther King and his work. And so one of my favorite quotes is a simple quote. It's on the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in Washington. I was there this past October, and I saw that. And it says this, you've probably heard it. It says, peace is not merely the absence of conflict, but the presence of justice. Now, I've always loved that quote, and it's been foundational to my understanding of what it means to be a peacemaker and how we understand peace from the life of Jesus and who he was and what it can mean in our world. But it has context. And just a while back, I was reading about that quote, and it came from a sermon that he gave in 1954 in Birmingham, Alabama. And it was the day before his first trial, after he had been arrested for breaking an anti-protest law in Birmingham, Alabama, that had to do with the desegregation of the University of Alabama. And he was speaking about how many people in the community were talking about, they were really impressed that things were really peaceful in Birmingham following a day of protest. And they were really happy about that. They were thankful that things were peaceful. And so having said that, start with the original quote. Peace is not merely the absence of conflict, but the presence of justice. Dr. King goes on in his sermon. He says this. He says, and even if we didn't have this tension, we still wouldn't have positive peace. Yes, it's true that if we accept this peace, this exploitation and injustice, there will be peace, but it would be an obnoxious peace. It would be a peace that boiled down to stagnant complacency and deadening passivity. And if peace means this, I don't want peace. I think the genius of Dr. King is he brought people together, and he spoke in such a way, and he cast a vision in such a way that we were all compelled of this common understanding of a common humanity. Despite what you thought, no one could argue with the fact that Dr. King called people to a common humanity, bringing them together and saying, we need one another. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, and a threat to it is something we need to give our attention to. But what oftentimes is probably overlooked, and probably from someone who sees Dr. King from a distance, is I don't know how hard it was. And Dr. King was someone who could sort of press. He could bring challenge in a way that I think is really difficult for us. A way that even then and now, if he were alive today, and we had the gift of his life today, I think to carry on his legacy means that we're people who both acknowledge this common humanity as a foundation of who we are and what it means to build unity, but also move toward a calling that says things cannot remain this way. Because if this is peace, if the status quo is just how it's going to be, it's a bit obnoxious. And maybe not for me, maybe not for you all the time in ways that we can notice, but for a lot of people, it's obnoxious and things cannot stay this way. You see, by personality and temperament and probably family of origin and all that kind of stuff, I'm a peacekeeper. I can stand up here and you guys think, oh, he's so courageous. No, like, I think whether it's in my family, my closest relationships, in my marriage, I generally like to just keep things nice and smooth. I'm definitely more comfortable that way. And so to be someone who cares about peacemaking in our world, I think I'm more of a peacekeeper. I like to just keep the peace. I don't like challenge in general. I resist it. But I think that if we're true to who Jesus was when he talked about peace, when he said, blessed are the peacemakers, that is not a nice saying that needs to be crocheted on a wall or put on a refrigerator magnet. To be a peacemaker in our world is truly a subversive act. It's uncomfortable and it's costly. If you would turn with me to Luke chapter 10, we're going to look at verses 25 through 35. Luke chapter 10. There's probably no other place where if we get curious and explore a text, we see just how subversive being a peacemaker is in our world. I want to look at a text that we looked at not too long ago. That's funny. I grabbed the wrong Bible at Uptown, or at Wash Park, and I had it marked. One second. It's like, this is not mine. This is the passage that many of you are familiar with. It's the passage of the Good Samaritan. We're going to begin in verse 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus, and he said, "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus responded, "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength, and with all of your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him." So, you may or may not be familiar with the story, but we literally have laws in our country that are written inspired by this story. It's one of the more popular sort of parables that Jesus taught. But I'm hoping this morning you would see that I believe this teaching is one of the most subversive teachings we can sort of embrace that show give us a path on what it means to be a peacemaker in our world. So we're told that a man, and in this context, it's not so explicit. We'd assume it's a Jew because Jesus is speaking to another Jew, and he's in a very Jewish context. He said a Jew, a common man, was walking from Jerusalem down to Jericho. So an area that's a very desolate road. Even today, it's sort of there's not a lot there because there's a huge elevation decrease from Jerusalem down to Jericho. If one were to travel that road, it's a very vulnerable way to go because things like this can happen. You could be jumped, right? You could be beaten, robbed like this man was. And so we're told that another Jew, but not just a Jew, a religious person, a priest, came by, and when he saw the man, he moved to the other side of the road and went on his way. He ignored him. Then we're told that a Levite, another very religious person, someone who was born into the priesthood, who would have great position and reputation, sees this man, a brother, and he ignores him. He goes on his way. Then we're told a Samaritan comes along. Now, a Samaritan and the Jews did not get along in their day in the first century. Samaritans were people who several hundred years ago, before that, during the time that Jerusalem was sacked by a foreign nation, they were a people who intermarried with that foreign nation. And so they were seen as half-breeds or half-Jews. It was that their lineage was, they have a Jewish ancestry, but they had born into foreigners. And so for them, they were seen oftentimes as dogs. They were seen as subhuman. There was a deep racism against and between Jews and Samaritans. And because of that intermarrying, that the Samaritans had different religious beliefs than the Jews, and so they were seen as compromisers. They were seen as those that didn't have the true revelation or the true word. There was religious prejudice against them, and it went both ways. They were a minority group, and so they didn't have as much power in this area in Jerusalem in the first century in Israel. So there was racism, there was religious persecution against them, and really they were seen as different tribes, so they had different customs, and the things that the Samaritans did that the Jews didn't were seen as grotesque and other, and so you really couldn't get more two people that were more different that had really contentious relationship that were really divided. So what changed? What changed for the Samaritan that when he walked by and saw this man who clearly was half dead, we're told, half alive, that made him change? And we're told that each one of them saw the man. The priest saw the man. The Levite saw the man. But we're told something different. It says that he had pity on him. Or another word to say here is that he had, the Samaritan had compassion on him. You think one of the most foundational teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King's life that was founded in the person of Jesus is that the birthright of every single human is that we are all sons and daughters of God. We all, our common inheritance is that we are all born as image bearers. The term for this is Imago Dei, the image of God. I think this Samaritan did something very, very subversive in his day, and he was able to acknowledge, despite the fact that this is a person that I really could ignore, and I would be far more justified than the Levite or the priest in doing so, I can't help but see divinity in him. I can't help but acknowledge that I could easily be in his place. There's a Chinese proverb that says so profoundly, what we often see is behind our eyes. You know? Such a simple way of saying that what is intuitive to all of us is that oftentimes what we see and what we might count as plain is not actually what's happening, but it's informed by our experiences, what's happened to us, what we have done to others, where we were born, and who and what family we were raised in, and what cultural context we were raised in. All of us are given lots of different things that inform the way that we see the world and that we see others. But something about this Samaritan man that Jesus is pointing out is that he was able to see beyond what he had inherited. He was able to see beyond what he was given naturally by his family or his culture or his tribe or his religious context. He saw something in this man that drew him in. You know, how we see others and how we interpret them says a lot about the stories that we tell ourselves, right? Because to see something in someone, to see past their humanity, to ignore them, is to tell ourselves a story about how they got there or who they are or why they're there. Obviously, this Levite and this priest, in my mind, probably had a lot of judgment about maybe why this person was in this place. Not only were they inconvenient, but there was a good chance they made a judgment about why they were there, and it somehow justified them to say, it serves him right. But this Samaritan did something different. Whatever story he was telling, the first story and the last story he told was that this was a child of God, and I could easily be in his shoes. The beginning of peacemaking, the beginning of being a peacemaker in the way of Jesus, is to see our common humanity and realize why someone got into some situation or why some issue is the way it is that we begin with the fact that we share something. He goes on. In verse 34, it says this. Then he went to him, and he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Now, we're told that the man had a donkey, because we know that he takes him off on his donkey. So the technical phrase here, theologically, would be the man got off his ass and he did something. It's biblical. Sorry, parents. It really is biblical. He did something. He saw him like everyone else did. He acknowledged with compassion. He saw their common humanity. But then he got down off his donkey and he moved toward him. He saw him and then he immersed himself. He immersed himself in this man's world. He got close. To me, the next step in peacemaking, if anything I've ever learned about mercy work and justice work, is that it's an issue of proximity. My friend Michelle Warren, who pastors just down the road, for several decades, wrote a book about the power of proximity and how really in her life work of doing justice, as she calls it, on the Jericho Road, is this question of am I going to get close? Because we can see something and we can, like, one of the things we love the most about Dr. King is this common humanity. But most of us are really, really uncomfortable when we get close, right? The person whose position we don't like, the person who maybe disgusts us, the person who we don't really, they're dirty. Yeah, fill in the blank for you on what it is, but it's really hard to choose to not keep going. There's a lot of centrifugal force that keeps us going in the direction on how we see the world and how we think. It is hard. It is costly to get close. But to be a peacemaker, we need to put ourselves in another person's shoes. And this is really subversive in the American context, isn't it? You know, I think a lot of times my friend John Huckins, who does this sort of work, talks about the idea of when we immerse ourselves in someone else's shoes, what we're choosing to do is move from being the hero to becoming a learner. The word I like the most is curiosity. It's not until we get close and we choose curiosity about another person to put ourselves in their shoes, to begin to interrogate the stories we might have told ourselves about them and why they got there and what they need and how they got there and what's the best thing for them. You see, in our American context, it's very heady and we go very quickly to solving problems and making decisions on other people's behalfs. Whether you post it on Facebook or actually talk about your political views or ideological views with others, we all have them, right? And they're informed by something. I think what Jesus is challenging is that we have to get in the shoes of the other and take a few steps in their shoes, in their life, before we make any assumptions about what they need and why they need it, who they are and how they got there. It's to become a learner and exercise curiosity. This is what it means to follow Jesus. I remember more than a year ago, in December of 2018, my friend Greg invited me to go to the detention center. It wasn't the first time, to be honest with you, I was invited to go to the detention center over in Aurora. And at the detention center, there's about 1,300 to 1,400 people who are in detention from all parts of the world who have found their way into our immigration system for a lot of different reasons. And I have been invited in the past to go to prayer vigils, which are barely an act of courage, really just to show up and pray. And I'd never gone, to be honest with you. Been asked for over 10 years, I've never gone. Because in my job, there's always different things to be involved in, right? Different opportunities to serve and justice work. But I felt compelled and I went. I did a visit. And I was so compelled by that, by being moving close, that I felt called to sign up and become, do some pastoral care in the detention center. And I tell you, I can still remember that cold December morning driving there after dropping my kids off at school and driving into the detention center, making a choice to go inside. And I had a little badge and everything, and they were all really kind. But you walk into that environment, it's very sterile, it's very controlling, and it's pretty much like a prison if you've ever been there. And to be locked into a pod with about 100 other people who are there for a variety of reasons from all across the world, I felt really, really uncomfortable. For me, immersing myself in that context, I thought I was brave, and then I got there, and I thought, I feel so inadequate. I still feel so vulnerable. But it wasn't till I went there, and I had my first time, and I got through it, and then I went back, and I had conversations with people. I began to learn and grow and hear about their stories that challenged my understanding, that challenged the stories I told myself. By actually praying with these men and women and hearing about their stories and their families and hearing their prayer requests, then the one synonymous prayer request that everyone has, which is obvious, is that I want to be out of here and be with my family, pray for my family, pray for my kids, pray for my mom, my dad, my loved ones. Over and over again, I began to see and move toward compassion to realizing there was a lot more going on than I knew. To be peacemakers, we need to see, and then we need to immerse ourselves. Picking up in verse 34, it continues. It says, he went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. This man saw them. He immersed himself in his context. And then he went and he did something so radical and so costly that he paid a great price to take care of this man. But I think the cost went beyond that. It wasn't just the money, and the money's a big deal, and the money's a big deal to us. It's a big deal to me, I'll say that. Generosity is oftentimes hard. This man lavished it on someone that everyone would say, you have no business doing. But I think about that's this man putting him on his donkey and then walking to wherever he went. We're not told. Maybe he went to Jerusalem, he went down to Jericho, maybe he went to another small town in the area. But think about what he was doing. Even beyond the money, think about his reputation. Think about what it meant to be seen helping a Jew and what people would have said about him. The ways that might have compromised his respectability, even compromised his courage. See, I think when we put ourselves in a situation and we see them and we draw near and we immerse ourselves, but then we begin to fight for them. We contend for them. And if we choose to do that, there's oftentimes a suffering that accompanies that. There's a loss. There's a sacrifice. And you know what keeps me in this? As I think about that and I'm honest with myself about what that has meant to me at times, which honestly is very few times that it's really cost me something. Usually it comes back with, it's been a great joy and a gift to me. But sometimes showing up, particularly in our culture today, I think when we show up on behalf of others and we want to be peacemakers, it will cost us something. Cost us something with our family, cost us something with our coworkers, maybe even cost us something in our immediate family. Because oftentimes to be a peacemaker in our world is going to challenge a predominant narrative that has a lot of centrifugal force that wants to keep going in the same directions. It wants you to be a peacekeeper. That if you talk about racial justice and it gets uncomfortable with your family and friends, you're going to be seen as liberal or divisive. People will make it all about them because they're going to give you their discomfort. If you talk about education reform or immigration reform in our world, it's going to cost you something because people are going to be really, really uncomfortable as if you're helping at them, right? That's what we do as humans. We get uncomfortable. And I think that we can talk about the money and all the different things there, but I think for many of us, our reputation is the thing that can often hurt the most and can be the most divisive. But you know, I've been so inspired, and the reason why I want to share this morning, why I think that we need to become those who have learned, become curious, and then begin to contend on behalf of others, because I've drawn courage from you, because in this last year, I've seen incredible courage in this community. You all have helped me along as a peacemaker, because I know many of you here have spoken out about things like racial justice and suffered in your employment, in your job, and your reputation has suffered. People have said false things about you. People have made up stories about you. They've not believed the best in you, and you've suffered. Others of you have chosen to get on and have taken some of the challenges. You've gone to an immigration center visit, and you've become someone who advocates on behalf of a friend, someone who's not just an other or a person with a hard trial or situation, but you've become a friend. You've come drawn close and you've immersed yourself. And there are those of you this morning that have gone on a visit and now you've become an advocate. You've raised money for someone in detention who's become a friend, whose story you can't ignore because you've immersed yourself in their life. And some of you have invited them into your home to stay with you after they've been released. Some of you have raised money publicly and have taken shots from family and friends who think you're being too political because you're making them uncomfortable because of the decisions you've made. Others of you have advocated for education reform in communities not far from here and taken low-paying jobs to serve in schools that need great teachers. You've tutored kids, and you've immersed yourself in the life of students who come from vulnerable families and in vulnerable situations. And so I'm inspired by the work you've done. You've taken action. One person who's here this morning who's really inspired me is a man named Selkie. Selkie's back there. Would you raise your hand, Selkie? I asked his permission before I said this. Selkie's from Cameroon. You guys all welcome Selkie. Say hi, Selkie. Selkie's from Cameroon, and he's several months ago, Selkie was in detention. Selkie is from Cameroon. If you don't know what's going on in Cameroon, you should Google it and inform yourself. It's not being talked about in the media, but there's a lot of difficult hardship between French-speaking peoples and English-speaking peoples in Cameroon. And Selke has suffered much. His family has suffered much. And he came to the United States to plead asylum, and Selke was locked up for several months in detention center. And because of folks here who were faithful to visit the detention center, Selke is one of the people that they befriended and got to know. And Selke was recently, just a couple months ago, given asylum status here in the U.S., which is a huge deal. You can clap for that. And so what's really inspiring about Selke's work is not everything he's endured, because he's endured a lot, unspeakable things. But what's more so inspiring is that Selke now does visits every Sunday morning with a group of DCCers who go back to the detention center. The very place that Selke suffered, and suffered a lot, he goes back to fight and to contend on behalf of others who are in detention. So thank you, Selke. Thank you for your courage and your love and the way you do that so well. It's inspired me. Selke and many others in our community have inspired me because you are waging peace. You're acting out and living out the subversive ways of Jesus that Martin Luther King called a peace affront. A peace offensive. And if you're going to live out a peace offensive versus a war or a violence offensive in our world, a peace offensive is going to cost you something and is going to offend other people. Thank you for inspiring me the way that you do. And I want to take this further as a community, because I believe to live out the subversive ways of Jesus as a peacemaker means to oftentimes challenge the norms of our culture and the norms of our day. And this is all toward what Jesus called the renewal of all things. Let's finish our time with Matthew chapter 19. Look at Matthew chapter 19. At the end, this is toward the end of Jesus' ministry. He talks about the renewal of all things. Jesus says this, speaking to some of his followers. He says, "Truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne, you have followed me, will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or fields for my sake will receive 100 times as much and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first." Jesus is speaking to those of his followers who have lost something for his sake, who have lost something for the sake of justice, lost something for the sake of what Dr. Martin Luther called the long arc of history that bends toward justice. Jesus is saying there will one day be a new economy. There will be a new society. There is hope in something that will be reordered. Things will be like shalom. Things will be made right. This is the renewal of all things. And so every time we act out as peacemakers and we do the costly work of seeing others in compassion, immersing ourselves in their lives, and becoming those who contend on their behalf, we're joining in the great, great legacy of Jesus followers who are working toward the renewal of all things. You see, to do this kind of work, to be a peacemaker in our world, is to sort of rehearse prophetically what will one day be. It's to live out hope. It's to live into actions that speak toward a greater future, the renewal of all things. And so this morning, inspired by the legacy of the peacemaking that you all have done, we've been doing some work over the last couple of months, and we're excited to announce this morning a new initiative of Denver Community Church called Project Renew. Project Renew is taking all the peacemaking, serving work, and transformative learning work we've already done in the city, but we want to take that further together as a community. And so you can go to projectrenew.org and learn more about this work. But let me give you a couple takeaways this morning as we think about what it means to be a peacemaker in our world and opportunities for you to join into this work if you're interested in seeing others, immersing, and contending on their behalf. One is a radical generosity. You guys are a radically generous community. I'm so thankful. For quite some time, we've given a large portion of our budget away to things outside of Denver Community Church. That number is now 20%. So 20% of every dollar you give, you know this, we've celebrated this as a community over decades, goes out into things locally, internationally, that is really beautiful peacemaking work in our world. We're going to further that And so because of the generosity of this church, we're able to take any dollar that you give goes toward that work, dollar for dollar, toward that justice work in our community and around the world. And so because of the work of those who are doing immigration center visits, and have identified immigrants who are in need of asylum, who deserve fair and equal representation, we've started a legal defense fund. And so if you're interested in giving to that fund, we started out with $5,000 because of your generosity, and we've had other people join on board. And so if you want to give to that fund, you can give to it today at projectrenew.org or in the coming months, and every dollar that will go toward legal defense and equal representation for those who are asylum seekers or otherwise who deserve fair representation. So we're super excited about that, the legal defense fund. So that's there on the website. Also, we talked about immersion this morning and immersing ourselves in the context of those who need peace in their lives. And so transformative learning is another value of Project Renew. And so we want to deepen and further the learning that we do as a community. And so one of the ways we do that is just by doing neighborhood walks and getting to know the place we're planted. And we want to start that here in the Uptown neighborhood because it's such an important neighborhood for our community. And so we have three of those in the next few weeks you can come and be a part of at projectrenew.org. You can sign up. We're going to do them on Saturday morning and Sunday after church. We're going to spend time together, get to know this immediate footprint. We're going to spend time learning about addiction, learning about homelessness here in the community, and visit some of the partners and the work they're doing. And then we're going to finish with a meal in context and hear from some of the folks who need some peace in their lives, just so we can sharpen our understanding and begin to appropriately immerse ourselves in this context. And then lastly, creative service. If we're going to be peacemakers, we have to live into creative love in our world. And that means not through violence, but this sort of peace, the peace offense that Martin Luther King Jr. talked about. And so one small way you can start by doing that work is Dry Bones is one of our local partners. They work with youth at risk. We've been a longtime partner for them, and several of you are serving with them on an ongoing basis. But there's a Dry Bones 101 class, which is how you get in to be a volunteer with Dry Bones, is that you learn about their context and learn about their work. And so if you're interested, we'd encourage you just to go today and see if that works for you, to sign up for that class and learn about homeless youth and the transient nature of Denver. We're one of the largest cities in the country that has one of the highest statistics of transient youth here in Denver. And it's a huge issue. It's a big reality for our city, and it's one that's oftentimes unseen. And Dry Bones is doing incredible work for that. So thank you. Thank you for your generosity. We're super excited. In the next couple months, you're going to hear more about the work of Project Renew, which is just a deepening of what we've always done. But we're excited about next steps that we get to take together as a community. If you have questions about that, some staff and others will be here to chat. Let's close our time with a prayer. God, thank you for this community. Thank you for the legacy of peacemaking that we get to be a part of. We're so thankful for Dr. King. I'm thankful for his legacy in my life, Lord. And I'm thankful for Jesus and the way that he paved the path for us to be peacemakers in our world. And I pray, I'm so grateful for the work that's already been done, the sacrificial way that so many in this community have stepped up to be peacemakers. And I pray this morning as we consider these things, what it means to be a peacemaker in the way of Jesus, God, that you would challenge us, that you would move us to take action and to be learners and to move toward creative acts of love in our world. We love you. In the strong name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.